Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now for something completely different than we've been talking about today. Listeners, have you ever intentionally changed your accent, and why? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I once did it, my first job in radio, up in Albany. They told me I had too much of a Queens accent, and I had to lose it to keep the job permanently. What about you? Have you ever changed your accent? And why? 212-433-WNYC. The U.S. is full of different regional accents, influenced by waves of migration and immigration and mixing, ethnicity, socioeconomic factors, everything. Maybe you grew up with a Southern accent, and they're not all the same. I lived in Virginia for a couple of years, and the accents in southeastern Virginia, where I was, were not the same as the accents from western Virginia, certainly not the same as the southern accent from Texas. Or maybe you have a what might be called a New York Latino accent. How about the Minnesotan accent, made famous in the movie Fargo, if you have no other contact with that? Of course, there are so many different, what linguists call, African-American English varieties. Did you grow up with one? Do we have any listeners with Hawaiian accents? But the question is, did you ever seek to change your accent and why? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. There are some articles about this recently, which is why we bring it up. But what about changing your accent? And do you feel like you've betrayed somebody if you've done that, betrayed your heritage in any kind of sense, or even you're just your geography, if you changed it for personal gain. According to the 2020 census, New York has lost over 300,000 residents just during the pandemic. So New Yorkers who might be listening to the show in other parts of the country, hello out there. Did you take your New York accent with you if you had one, or did you leave it behind, or are you trying right now to move it behind? Joining me now to take some of your calls and to talk about history and characteristics of some regional accents is Eric Singer, a dialect coach for film and television. His recent work includes Terminator, Dark Fate, Disney's live-action Mulan, and others. Maybe you've seen his Webby Award-winning videos for Wired, where he talks about language and accent variety more generally. They've been viewed over 70 million times. Eric, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. Great to be here.
So does this happen a lot? Do people, judging by the way our phones have exploded right away when I ask the question?
I wish I could see. I bet it's lighting up.
You're going to, you know, you'll hear some of the stories. But do you deal with this as a voice coach? Do people come to you and say, I want to lose my fill-in-the-blank accent?
Yeah, non-actors, what we might refer to as civilians, coming to sort of make a change. It does happen. The first thing that I will always do in a situation like that is have a conversation with them about why they want to do that, give them a lot of sort of sociolinguistic context, and hopefully discourage them from pursuing such a radical path. Because there's a lot of social facts and linguistic facts that sort of underlie this that I think aren't as widely understood as they should be. And among other things, all accents, all dialects spoken by native speakers are, linguistically speaking, are equal. So we have, we have judgments, we have high prestige, we have low prestige, but these things are purely social in nature and not remotely linguistic. So we got to start from that, first of all.
Let's take one random example before we go to calls. That Fargo accent, the one from parts of Minnesota. Of course, Fargo's not in Minnesota. It's in, I forget, is it South Dakota or North Dakota?
North Dakota.
Linguists say it was formed because of immigrants from Germany, Sweden, and Norway concentrating there. Can you break that down further and why it came out sounding like what we now think of as Minnesota?
Not a ton further, because I don't think we really know for sure. That is a reasonable speculation based on, just the sheer numbers of immigrants and the, over the time and during the sort of critical period of time when these things were being developed. You know, one of the main things that characterizes that Fargo accent, right, is O's and A's, right? So your O, hope, only, and your A, day, train, right? Those sounds being what we call like a monophthong, a single long-held pure vowel sound as opposed to a diphthong, right? When I say O or A, for me, there's a little movement in those vowel sounds, so that's a diphthong. So those are monophthongized, and that is definitely... Those are vowel sounds we can find in all of those languages, and so it's absolutely a reasonable speculation. But it's, you know, it's a little bit of we're, you know, sort of connecting the dots when we attribute it to that.
Let's take a phone call, Vinny in Astoria. You're on WNYC. Hi, Vinny.
Good morning. How are you?
How are
you? Morning,
Vinny. Good, good. So yeah, I heard the question, and I figured, you know, I do this all the time, especially with people that, you know, are immigrants to the country. I happen to be an immigrant myself, and I have a friend that she kind of hates that I do this, but I've always asked the people, when I put on an accent that they kind of have, does that help them understand, because they don't speak English as well as I do? And they always say yes, yes, because when I speak like normal, you know, my like my everyday English, I tend to speak fast, so they don't, they say, oh, we don't understand, you know? So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, and that's
well. I'm gonna try to answer your question, or have our guests do it. But Eric, how would you describe Vinny linguistically? First of all, people are hearing Vinny, and in New York anyway, probably saying, "Oh, I know that one."
Well, Vinny sounds pretty New York. I mean, I think he's probably been here a while.
What you're talking about? I'm not from New York.
Yeah.
I've been here for 31 years. I'm actually from Kosovo, Albanian from Kosovo. I came here in the early 90s.
So, gotcha. Eric, when Vinny does something like he described he does to make others feel more comfortable, and I think he just gave us an example of it when he lapsed into something else, do you think people receive that as a way of reaching out, a sign of respect, or more like they're being mocked?
Well, it really could go either way, couldn't it? I mean, I think the devil's probably in the details. You know, it sounds like Vinny probably has a good sense of that and a good touch with sort of you know, describing what he's doing or making sure that that context is understood. You know, we actually all do at least a little bit of that most of the time. It's been really, really, really well studied, and it's just been duplicated over and over and over again in research. We all do, it's linguists call it conversational convergence, or just accommodation more simply, which is that we moderate our accents a little bit, at least unconsciously, in the direction of people that we're talking to. And it goes along with affinity. So we tend to do it more with people that we like or who we want to like us, and a little bit less, you know, if that is not present. But you know, everybody knows people who are aware that they do it, feel like they do it a lot, or their kids tell them they do it and say, stop that. But we all do it at least a little bit.
Mary, so, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you
sorry.
Finish your thought? No, we'll go next to Mary in Manhattan, who I think has an interesting story. Hi, Mary. You're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning. I grew up in the South. I was born in Greenville, Mississippi. And I grew up in Arkansas. I went to college in Tennessee, and I was lucky enough to go to law school here in New York. And in the first year, they have a moot court competition, and I was in the moot court competition. And one of the judges, who was a graduate of law school, he told me that I did an excellent job, but that my Southern accent would be a hindrance to my legal career in New York, and that no one would take me seriously in court, and that any judge would knock 30 points off my IQ if they heard me speak, and that he recommended that I go straight to Broadway and take allocution lessons so that I can lose the Southern accent. And I was deeply offended, as was the person I was debating against, and like many, you know, people who've tried to put me down, I didn't listen to him, and I went and I talked to the law school about it, and they apologized. And I'm now a courtroom lawyer, a partner in a law firm. I've been a federal prosecutor, and I am, you know, who I am. And, you know, my father, he grew up in the deep, deep South, and he said things like vehicle and vegetable and, you know, all these words. And I now say vehicle and vegetable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I grew up in the South in a small town, and I think I've, you know, done pretty well for myself in New York.
Do you sort of code switch sometimes, Mary? Put on one more or take one off more, depending on your circumstances?
Well, you know what I try to do sometimes if I'm in court, I try to maybe have a lower voice, which I'm trying to do right now, in a slower voice, because I think a lower voice is sometimes more effective. And I'm talking a little bit now in my court voice.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, if I've just spoken to my mother, she's 89, people have told me when I speak to my mother on the phone, I sound more like I'm in Arkansas. Anyway, it's very interesting. So I just appreciate sharing my story.
Thank you. And we appreciate you doing it. Thank you very much. Bill in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how do you do? I am from the misbegotten state of Texas. Been here in New York 25 years, and I did what I could to scrub most of the Southern accent from my voice when I was an adolescent. Sounded more Liverpudlian there for a while, which was complicated my backstory, of course. But there are a couple things I cannot bring myself to say because they sound too effete. I cannot say the word pecan because pecan is a pretty word, but pecan is just... And it's not. And I still say cement instead of cement.
There you go. And do people judge you for any of this?
You know, a lot of people say, I can't place, you know, where you are, but you don't quite sound New York.
Yeah.
And so, but that's that.
Bill,
by the way, I'm from a little town of Texas where Janis Joplin and Robert Rauschenberg are from, Port Arthur, Texas.
Bill, thank you very much. David in Newburgh, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi, how's it going? I grew up here in New York in the Hasidic community, and my first language is Yiddish. And when I was around 8, I started to learn English. And by the time I was 13 or 14, I was attending a non-Hasidic school that was super, still ultra-Orthodox. And I immediately tried to change my accent. And you can hear what I sound like now. I didn't want to sound like my old classmates from elementary school who kind of had like a little bit of a broken English, like Yiddish inflections in the way they spoke English. So, I don't know, I thought it was pretty interesting. And I still find myself like kind of changing the way I speak depending on who I'm talking to.
How do you feel about all that today?
I don't know. I haven't really explored it too much. I guess it's just like when I speak to someone who grew up in that community and hasn't done this, I just note that their English sounds quote. I don't want to say broken, but that's kind of what it sounds like to me. So I feel like I've gotten to where I'm at in my career and with work and everything by just being able to like speak on everyone else's level, I guess, and not sound like my English is broken.
David, thank you for your story. We really appreciate it. So Eric Singer, dialect coach for film and television. His recent work includes Terminator, Dark Fate, Disney's live-action Mulan, among others. Maybe you've seen his Webby Award-winning videos for Wired, where he talks about language and accent variety generally. They've been viewed over 70 million times. Give me anything you were thinking as you heard any one of those callers.
Well, the bottom line here, and this is again, I think, is just a super important aspect of all of this, is that people's accents are on a very, very deep level. They're a reflection of their identity. They're a reflection of who they are in a really complex way, right? Because it's a record of choices that are made at the time when we're first forming that. So we find that people are very, very changeable up to the age of about 12 or 13. Things start to settle in, both language and accent-wise, around the same time as people are kind of making slightly more permanent choices about who they are, what groups they feel like they belong to and don't. And of course, those can be overlapping things, and we can get people who are masters of more than one mode, right? And so code switch between two different modes. But, you know, they're always, when we dig into the story, it's always a reflection of that. It's those choices. That's why two people who grow up in exactly the same family in exactly the same place can wind up sounding completely different because they're making different choices along those lines.
Darren in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Darren.
Hello there. You know, I'm really curious. I grew up in central Jersey near Trenton. And, you know, this came up when Mayor of Easttown aired on HBO. But I grew up speaking an accent that people associate with Philadelphia, where we say things like, you know, I'm going to get a Wooter ice and I'm heading home. You know, my dad used to talk about opening the windows on Tuesday and all that kind of stuff. And my friends who I grew up with from back home always imagined that accent, that Philly, South Jersey, East Pennsylvania, even Delaware, parts of Maryland, as being almost mashed up with New York. But I'm wondering what the guest thinks about the origins of that accent.
I'm in terms of origins, it's always hard to sort of figure out, trace back, when we're going back before where we have a lot of recordings or good attestations. That line that sort of, you know, cuts through New Jersey around Trenton or a little bit higher really does, you know, carve the state into two sections. So that sort of northern and most of central New Jersey is in the New York City accent region sort of sphere of influence, and South Jersey is in the Philadelphia accent sort of sphere of influence. And you mentioned some of the telltale shibboleths for that. In terms of exactly where some of those sounds are coming from in that Philadelphia influenced area, I'm not sure. I'd have to do a little research to see if there have been some people who've tried to piece that out.
We've only got a minute left. One listener responding to the question, have you ever changed your accent on purpose? Tweets, yes, to save my life. Sounding more academic when speaking to people in positions of authority, police in particular, reduces the risk of their having a negative assumption of me. I'm sure you've heard that one before. But let's end sort of hyper-local. I grew up in Queens. Eric Adams grew up in Queens. If you heard either of us without knowing us, would you say Queens and Queens?
Nope. This is gonna get some response, but New York City accents do not vary by borough. We know this for a fact. They vary by a lot of things, and there are a whole lot of accents in New York City, but varying by borough is not a thing.
What about varying by ethnic group within a borough?
Absolutely. Well, ethnic groups, but more likely across the city and even to some extent the broader area. So, yes, all the factors that factor into identity in a very strong way. So, you know, kind of socioeconomic background and ethnicity and race and all of these things tend to be what determine those variations.
Eric Singer, dialect coach, thank you so much for joining us today. Really fascinating.
It's my pleasure, Brian. Thank you so much for having me.